You are listening to Zoom, the Retro Comic Book Show. Episode, I'll be talking about, I guess you can call it a Batman episode, ramping up for The Dark Knight Rises this weekend. So what's going on in the news? Basically, they're talking about how badass Dark Knight Rises is going to be at the box office. It says, let me read some of this stuff here I got from online. I don't know where I got it. Fuck them. What are they going to do, sue me? I only got like 5 people who listen to this podcast. Anyway, I took this information from the internet, and I'll just take credit for it. It says, Dark Knight Rises is certain to have the biggest opening ever for a non-3D movie. And it's probably going to, it might beat Avengers, even though Avengers, you know, had the added bonus of having added price on the tickets because it's a 3D movie. And someone had to point out, of course, without the 3D price, Avengers would have made $174 million in its first weekend, not $208 million. The Dark Knight Rises will rule them all. In other words, he's saying Dark Knight Rises is going to beat $175 million easy. And why the competition? Who cares? You know, the Avengers made more. Dark Knight Rises made more. I'm just happy that all these comic book movies came out this year. I liked Avengers a lot. I liked Spider-Man a lot. Now let's see how a Dark Knight Rises. I'm looking forward to that. Let's see how that's going to be. That's all. That's all I care about here. Rush Limbaugh is not too happy. Rush Limbaugh is a conservative, bloated talk show host, full of hot air and bullshit, who's been on the air for more than 20 years. He's a piece of shit, and I don't know how conservatives can listen to him, why they can't demand more, but I think that's because conservatives' philosophy in this country is so full of shit that the only person, you know, that they can listen to are people who are full of shit, like Rush Limbaugh, and he's so used to being full of shit. And fuck all the people who say, you both of you conservatives on the Republican side and the Democrats on the other side are sheep. Both the Democrat Party and the Republican Party are fooling you guys. You know, and to those people I say, you're the most worthless people of all, because if we're being used and abused as citizens, what are you doing to fight it? Are you going to overthrow the government? Do something. You're just sitting on your ass. What are you going to fucking do? Sitting on your ass on the computer and fucking complaining. At least we're voting and supporting a candidate or whatever. But let's get back to Rush Limbaugh. He's mad because Dark Knight Rises is coming out, and the main character's name, or the main bad guy in the movie, is called Bane. And Bane is also the name of, even though it's spelled differently, of a corporation run by, or I forgot what it is, some business, some company that Mitt Romney was dealing with, which is how he got rich, and he ripped off a bunch of people with this company, Bane. And Rush Limbaugh is trying to say that the liberals in Hollywood named the character Bane in this movie, so us movie viewers who are sheep will go and see it, and subconsciously we'll see the name Bane in the movie. link that over to Mitt Romney, how he ripped off a bunch of people with his company, Bain, and we'll vote for Obama. That he said that. He actually said that. Okay, because he said these people who go see these movies are basically a bunch of idiots, brain dead idiots. And it's like, dude, you're probably, you definitely are insulting most of your audience because they're going to see the movie too. But, and they're not going to vote for Obama. So the movie is not brainwashing anybody. Plus, I mean, the fact that, and then he said, then he rationalized everything because people said, well, wait a minute, Bruce Wayne is rich in the movie. He's the rich guy. And Bane is actually, you know, the bad guy is actually kind of, he's putting together a group, a ragtag group of citizens to fight against the rich and Bruce Wayne. And, of course, Rush Limbaugh rationalized that and be like, well, all the bad guys, he said, Bruce Wayne is rich, that's true, but all the bad guys in these movies, they're rich too, aren't they? Whatever. And so, like, dude, you have to have an argument. That's why I can't see how people listen to him when he can just put together any old bullshit argument. Plus, you know, a couple of minutes of research would have told him before he started the show that Bane was a character that was created in 1993 and it was in another movie in 1997. And plus, if he thinks people are fucking idiots, why would they know that Mitt Romney had a company called Bane in the first place? But stupid is the stupid does. I just needed something to rip on for this show and marvel at of how dumb somebody can be. What else I got? Oh, this weekend when I came from San Diego Comic-Con, I was rushing home so I can get some sleep and go to a skit. Go to shoot this video with a new up-and-coming comedian comedy group called Creepy Caress. And it's two women, and one of them is fine as hell. And she was like, yo, I need men for this skit, all men. I should have asked the question what she needed all men for the skit for. She said, it's only going to be a half hour. Anybody who wants to join up, fine. But I kept forgetting to ask her what the skit was going to be about. So that night, you know, I woke up late, but I got over there that night, brought a friend with me, and it turned out the skit is, when they called us in, it was a bunch of us guys, we're going to get down on the floor and basically be a pile of dead bodies, but that meant us laying on top of each other, laying on each other's legs and on the floor. One guy got a couple of dudes laid on him, but it's like, I'm like, damn, bitch, you got me. But, you know, I don't do extra work anymore at all. Again, my friend Jeff, who I went with that night, he the next day he was going to go to a cattle call, like, for extras for this new Steve Jobs movie, and they're not paying anybody anything. They said they're going to feed you. They probably ain't, you know, they're probably going to feed you shit, and they're going to treat you like shit the whole day. And I'm trying to tell him not to go. Don't go, especially for free. Don't do it. But this shoot on that Sunday night, I knew it was going to be short because they don't have big budget. They're not going to shoot anything too long. So I went to Creepy Caresses skit, but I should have asked them what it entails, you know. And, you know, it was no problem. It was fun. Everybody had on their clothes and we laid on the floor and did it. And it was a little fun, little shoot. I shouldn't say fun, though. It was just, it was just interesting to see what they were doing. But I ain't doing no more extra work after this. However, because the director was a dick. It was a kind of a dick for her little shoot. But the question I had was, here's the skit. It's a little comedy bit, probably 2 or 3 minutes or less. One of the female comedians says to others, which they read that story. I don't know if you read it. In the newspaper about a guy, or I don't know where it was, some Asian country, where this woman and a man got in an argument, and she squeezed his nuts. She squeezed him so hard she wouldn't let go, like a vice grip. She broke his fucking nuts, and he died. he died. And the skit is that this comedian, she doesn't believe the story. Like, how could you kill a man by squeezing his balls? So she puts an ad out in the paper, or whatever. She invites guys over, and she squeezes their balls, and into the last bit of the of the skit, where there's a pile of us dead bodies, and it just pans up to her talking about, okay, I believe it. It's true. You know, there's more to the skit than that. But my question is, why would you need more than one, or even two, to prove the point? Why would you need like 20 guys piled up in a dead body? Why would you need to do it 20 times? Wouldn't the first one prove that the story is true? Even though in real life, I think there was more to the story of why the guy died than just his balls being broken. But yeah, that's the skit. No more extra work for my ass. I'm just, if I work in the industry, it's gonna be writing or whatever, producing. By the way, let's see here. Oh, there were two. Speaking of comics, even though we weren't speaking of, well, I say speaking of video shorts, there were two video shorts. They came out of Comic-Con this weekend that have to do with new Marvel Comics characters. They hit the web, and one of them was something that Thomas Paine, the guy who played Punisher, he gets on my fucking nerves. I think his name is Thomas Paine. Anyway, it's not important. The guy who played Punisher 2 movies ago in 2004, that motherfucker, he did a Punisher short where he plays the Punisher again, and it's just a short called "Dirty Laundry" about him going to a laundromat, and there's these neighborhood thugs are bothering people, and the Punisher puts down, you know, justice. And basically, it's very ho hum. Everybody, you know, some people are, I love it, making a big deal out of it, but it's very ho hum video. And what I want to know is, everybody is saying they love this, and this Payne guy should play Punisher again, but how is that any different than the Punisher? What was it? I forgot what the name of Punisher Warzone from a few years ago. It's ultra bloody, just like this short. So why didn't people go see that? But they think this short is so great because the short has a lot of gore and blood in it, but it's digital blood. It's that fake, fucked up CGI blood that looks shitty. And the way the Punisher fights the bad guys here and kills them all is not believable. He would have got shot down before he even got to the second bad guy. And it's just stuff we've seen before. So I don't know if you want to go and see Dirty Laundry short, go ahead and see it. But there's another one that looks more promising, and even that is whack. It's called Item 47. It's a short about a man and a woman who find one of the weapons that the Chitauri dropped in the Avengers movie. At the end of the Avengers, you know, there's a weapon. You know, there was a bunch of weapons and shit. Okay, that's why this short doesn't make sense. The man and woman find a weapon, and they want to use it to make money, basically probably robbing banks and stores. But the thing is, they were in the skit, they act like, oh, this thing just dropped out of the sky in front of us, and it was meant for us. And it's like, wait a minute, a whole bunch of Chitauri weapons dropped out of the sky in Avengers. That wouldn't mean, like, she was acting like it was kismet fate that this weapon dropped before them to give them a better life. But it's like, no, bitch, it's a weapon, part one. Part two, a million people, 100,000 people, whatever, in New York ran across these things when the Avengers defeated the Chitauri. So I don't understand that part, how it's supposed to be a special weapon that they find. Wouldn't there be like several people? If they stole a Chitauri weapon, wouldn't be 1,000 people have stolen a Chitauri weapon? Anyway, I saw 1 minute of it online. It's like a sneak preview teaser to it, and the dialogue is boring and bad until you get to the last 10 seconds when she's convincing her boyfriend, let's use this weapon. I'm like, how are they going to use it to make money? And they answer that question by pulling on ski mask. So that's very Tarantino-esque at the end. Unfortunately, the rest of the trailer, the 1 minute of dialogue that they spoke, that wasn't Tarantino-esque at all. That was very bland. That was very Sam Raimi dialogue in Spider-Man 3 bad. So, yeah, item 47, that will be on the Avengers DVD when it comes out. A special short movie. That'd be interesting. Let's see here. What else is going on? Oh. Back to comic books. I had six when I came in, moved in this spot a couple of years ago. I had six. Yes, six comic boxes. Let me see. One, two, three, four. Yeah, six, maybe even seven. I think I six plus, let's say that, of comics. I'm like, that is too much, many fucking comics. And I just whittled it down to about four boxes of comics. I stopped buying comics altogether. Well, I mean, I do buy some once in a while when I'm trying to review comics for this show. But I said, you know what? F it. I'm just going to review the comics I had here that I hadn't read for this show. Y'all just going to have to get old comics. But my thing is, I gave away two boxes of comics. And why is it so hard to give away a fucking comic or even sell them for a cheap price? I go on the internet on Craigslist. There's 1,000 people trying to sell comics. And they're trying to sell comics for like, they have like, maybe 40 comics that are older from 10 years ago, maybe a little bit older from 15 years ago, and they expect to get buku bucks for it, like $600, because these are quote unquote collectible comics. It's like there's no such thing as collectible comics, and I just wonder how long these ads sit there. I don't sit there and look at them for days on end. I don't know, but I want to know like. Are they just sitting there forever, hoping what somebody's gonna bite one day? Because I don't know about that. I just don't know. And I myself said, "Let me try." I've been giving out comics. This is what I do when I get too many comics. I give away a whole box of them. I whittle it down to the ones that I want to give away, and it's hard doing. But I just bite the bullet and, whittle it down to a box. So I give them away. That you'll find a thousand motherfuckers who would take some free like you fucking idiots. I had this is what the thing. I was giving away comics, and one day I say, let me take one of my boxes of comics that I want to give away, and I'll sell it instead for. But I won't sell it for $100, $200 like these assholes. I just sell it for $20. That way, at least I can get some lunch out of it. I get a free lunch. What do you know, idiots, idiots? Okay, first of all. Somebody flagged my shit and tried to take it offline, and I just had to put it back up. Two times I got flagged. That never happened before. I think because I'm undercutting everybody else who's selling comics. But okay, but it's not just that person's fault because the comics were still sitting up there for days before I got flagged and taken down. And it trips me out how Craigslist would just take you down without even. They without even consulting you and seeing what the fuss is about. But so they took me down. It's still not their fault because anybody who wanted to buy 300 comics or more, however many you can fit in the long box, for fucking $20, and they just ignored that. What a bunch of fucking idiots! So I said, okay. At some point, I was like, man, fuck it. I'm just gonna give these comics away. So I put them up for free, and of course, a bunch of cheap motherfuckers, hundreds of people, not hundreds, but let's say 20, 30 people in an instant, talking about they want the comics for free. They'll take them off my hands. Of course, you will, you fucking idiots. But when I was selling the comics for $20, one guy had the nerve to say, oh, I'll buy them off of you, but I live down in Long Beach or wherever he lived, and I can't make it halfway. Can you drive halfway to meet me? And I'm like, no, fuck you. Hung up the phone on this idiot. I'm giving him basically $100 or more worth of comics, depending on who you ask. If anybody else had it, they'd try to sell these comics for add up to $100 more. I'm giving it to him for $25. If you go by cover price, it's way more than $100. So I'm trying to give him for $20, and he wants me to he meet him. So I was like, no. I was like, fuck it, I give up. I'm going to give them away free. I just want to get rid of it. So I put it on for free. One guy says, I give you $20 for it. And I'm like, you idiot. Why wasn't you scanning the for sale collectibles before? Then you could have bought it for me then. But I said, okay, fine. He trumps everybody who wants to get it for free. Come down, meet me at this spot. I tell him the exact street. I live on Brand Avenue. Well, I don't live there. I live off of that. But I give him the address of Brand Avenue because I want him to meet me behind the building on Brand, which is next to my apartment. I give him the address, 1021 Brand Avenue. This fool calls back later, talking about he's on his way. Then he gets down there. He said, I'm down here. I'm waiting for this fool for the longest time. And then he says, okay, I'm down here. Where are you? I said, I'm right here in the lot. He said, did you say North Brand? I'm like, no, I said Brand Street. And not only that, in my text to him, I said Brand. But on the original posting, I said Brand and Chevy Chase. That's specific cross street. If you're not at Brand and Chevy Chase, then you're not there. And this fool, he's on North Brand, which is only 10 minutes down the street. If you're, you know, with lights and traffic, it's 10 minutes. And he's like, and like, he's all pissed off. I'm like, dude, I wrote Brand Street. I didn't write nothing about no North Brand. Not only that, in the actual ad, if you read it, it said Brand and Chevy Chase, the corner of Brand and Chevy Chase. But and I didn't call him a dumbass, but I'm like, but you, you sat there and got whatever information you wanted from wherever you got it, but didn't take into the account all the information. You went to North Brand when I said Brand. You didn't look at the cross street for Chevy Chase and Brand, which he would know if he looked at the map that he's on the other side of the freeway. So I said, dude, all you got to do now is just go down Brand. Just drive down Brand like you're driving towards L.A. Takes 10 minutes or less to get here. He's like, you know what? I don't know. I just want to cancel it. Then I hang up on him right away, because if he says he's going to cancel, he didn't say cancel it. He just said, dude, I don't think I could do this, man. I don't feel like, I don't think I can find this place. I don't think I'm going to buy your comics. So I said, okay, that's a waste of my time. He just wasted half hour of my motherfucking time of me waiting for him. Half hour, or actually more than half hour. So I clicked it off. I hung up on him. What's more to talk? Then I get a text from him. What a dick. I'm the dick. I'm the dick. How is he going to call me a dick when I told him to drive down the street to meet me because he wasted my time? Then he's going to call me a dick because he's a pussy and can't drive down the street. I text the information to him again, how to get here. Easy for retarded people. But he never texts me back. So he lost a bunch of comics for $20, and I gave away one of the comics. Luckily, who I gave it to was a guy who had kids. The guy looked broke and busted. But he was like, I knew he wasn't the comic collector because he was a brother with dreads. He just doesn't seem like the type. He was going to pick up his kids, but he had three kids. And, you know, you could tell his ass was broke and that they like comics. But who can afford comic books? He admitted that he couldn't afford to buy the comics that they wanted because, you know, look, it's $3 and $4. So I gave him that. Plus, I gave him another item that was in a box, a toy that I bought from my cousin. Not my cousin, my nephew. But it would be too big to send it to him. He lives in New York. I live in California. So it'd cost like $50, $60 to send it to him in the mail, more than the item is worth. So I gave it to this guy for his 8-year-old kid, and I gave him the comic books. So that's my adventures in giving out comics. And now as I'm reading comics and reviewing them for this site, I'm still giving them away. As soon as I, right now I got like a 1/10, yep. I say 1/10 of a long box of comics that I'm ready to give away. And as I review more for this site, I'm going to give them away. And here's 8 more comics that I'm going to give away that I'm about to review. Oh, by the way, and I'm not doing this shit anymore. I was thinking about, like, maybe I should give it away to listeners of this show. Like, fuck that. 5 years ago, I put down a list of comics that I was giving away. And I said, okay, you know, I'm broke. So if you want them, all you got to do is pay for shipping and handling. That's it. Just pay for shipping and handling, not for the comics. And 2 people answered it. and I sent them the comics and they never sent me the shipping and handling. That's fucked up. Okay. But anyway, and forget it. They didn't even ask me, because I kind of know the people, and they didn't even ask me, yo, Tim, can we be exempt from this? No, they didn't ask me. So I assumed they was going to send me the money. They didn't send me the money. So fuck that. I ain't doing that shit no more. But this time, and plus, it's hard to give away stuff on a podcast. Very hard. People don't want the shit. Because right now, I can give away 82 comics, put it in one of those UPS medium boxes. About 82 comics or more. And you would pay $10 shipping. So then you would get 82 comics for $10. You know, from, you know, they're from 90s, 2000, but fuck that. I'm just going to give away in the Los Angeles area. Oh, here's two more that I'm adding to my giveaway list. Not two more, eight more. Actually, 10 more. from DC Comics. Here's my review of Dark Knight Rise, or let's see, The Legend of the Dark Knight. Actually, I'll review it right after this break, because I need to take a break, give me something to drink, and I'll do a review of the Dark Legends of the Dark Knight from 2005.
This is a Mr. Magic Super Flash.
I love you, Mr. Magic, and this is for you.
Here's my review of Batman, Legend of the Dark Knight, issues 185 to 189 and 192 to 196. Both of them are five-part stories dealing with two classic and familiar Batman rogue gallery bad guys. The first one is Riddle Me This. And Riddle Me That. Actually, the story is called Riddle Me That from Legend of the Dark Knight 185 to 189. It's a story, of course, about who else? The Riddler. By Shane McCarthy and art by Tommy Castillo and Rodney Ramos. Castillo and Ramos's art is very unimpressive in this story. The story by McCarthy is even less impressive than the plain looking artwork. It's a very pedestrian battle of slow wits. A battle of the slow wits between Castillo's Batman and Riddler. And fans should want to kick Castillo's ass for the way he portrayed the Riddler in here. It's a newer, edgier Edward Nygma, by the way, without the garish suits with the green and purple question marks all over it. He's the Hitler I mean, the Riddler is like a 30-something hip-looking douchebag. Like, he looks like the assholes that you see at the club trying to pick up 22-year-old girls. And he's all, you know, with the dark suits and got the collar buttoned down, unbuttoned down to his chest. And he doesn't have any question marks on him except for one question mark that he has tattooed on his neck. And he has a new badass attitude where he's not taking any more shit from Batman. He's a total dickhead, okay? I mean, he's just an asshole. And I don't mean the bad guy asshole. I mean, like, going to the club. Like, oh, here we go. Night at the Roxy. The two characters played by Will Ferrell and the other guy. Remember that skit in Saturday Night Live? He's those guys now. That's exactly what he looks like. And it's like, this thing here, this story was so awful that it made me want to watch the shitty and campy Adam West TV series from the 1960s just so I can see the only good thing in that series, Frank Gorshin's Riddler. That's the only good thing about that damn stupid TV show was the Riddler, and the only version of the Riddler that we need to see. This 5-issue story arc is so fucking forgettable that I had to go back and reread 3 issues, because I read like 2 or 3 issues and I said, okay, I'll read the rest tomorrow. And I forgot, I totally forgot what happened in those 3 issues. and I like, damn, if I start reading issue 4 and 5 now, I won't know, because I don't remember what happened before. And I had to go back and scan those 3 issues, just remember, okay, now I'm caught up. I remember a little bit of it. It's that forgettable. It's that fucking annoying, and it's got this one cliche character in there who's a news reporter who has to follow Batman, or else the cops aren't, because it's not Commissioner Gordon who is head of the cops here, it's another cop, because I guess they had to do that to explain only an asshole would allow this to happen, and Commissioner Gordon ain't this fucking stupid. The guy says it's a new captain or whatever, who's somebody taking over for Commissioner Gordon while he's away on vacation or something, and the guy says, "Oh, Batman, you gotta let this reporter follow you around, or not a reporter, somebody from the mayor's office or something." Well, I don't know who the fuck this bitch is. It's that unimportant. She has to follow Batman around so the city can see that it's okay for the cops to work with him. They gotta see the way he works. And it doesn't make a lick of fucking sense. So there's that. Then there's the ending, which was dumb. And it basically said that, oh, Nigma is so smart that he can beat Batman at any time. Which, if Batman can get beat by this fucking idiot, Batman, it's time to call it quits. I hated this story. It gets no stars out of 5. That's Riddle Me That from 2005, Legends of the Dark Knight, 185 to 189. Now, a couple of issues after this arc ended, another story arc started up. It's called Snow, issues 192 to 196. And I wasn't wanting to like it because of the last arc that I just read. And the art was kind of weird looking on the cover. So I was like, fuck this. I'll just read it, get it over with. Because I've been trying to read these comics for years, but I, you know, hadn't had the time or the interest to read them, but I pushed myself to go read them. And I'm glad I did for this one. This story, much, much better. It's a story by J.H. Williams III. Yes, I believe that same J.H. Williams III who does the beautiful artwork for Batwoman. He didn't do any artwork here. I wish he did. but he came up with the story along with Dan Curtis Johnson, and Dan Curtis Johnson also wrote the script. So J.H. Williams is definitely an artist, because he just came up with some story ideas with this Johnson guy, and Johnson did all the grunt work doing the script, and he did a good job on it too. Like I said, I wish Williams did the art, but alas, they did get somebody who was about as original as J.H. Williams is with the art, very distinct art style, but nowhere near as good. The guy's name is Seth Fisher, and well, the late Seth Fisher. He's dead now. Actually, he was born the year I was, 1972, and he died 2006. He was partying in Japan on a rooftop party and fell off the roof. But you could tell his art was, I guess his art, I think it looks kind of like Japanese inspired, not anime inspired Japanese, but the kind of like modern art Japanese type of work. It's weird. I can't explain it. But you may remember his art if you saw the book or remember the book from the early 2000s called Iron Man Fantastic Four, Big in Japan. I don't know if you remember that one. That's the art style for this. Fisher also did a lot of artwork in the Big Book series. Remember those big books? The Big Book of Death, Big Book of Weird People, Big Book of Bad Guys, you know. And it's, he did some work in Big Book of Vice, Big Book of 70s, and Big Book of Grimm, I believe it was. And yeah, unique art style. His art style is good, very, very good. But I don't think it suits a superhero comic that well, in my opinion. It's better for quirky stories like the Big Book short stories and indie comics would have suited him better, I think. But he probably wanted to work in superhero because that's what the big bucks are with DC and Marvel. But still, his artwork is still beautiful, and it worked with this story because Batman wasn't doing a lot of action here. It was more like a lot of talking heads and weird images work here. You see something like a character in the corner of the panel, the main character of the panel. Like, say, Dr. Freeze, you'll see him somewhere there. Victor Freeze, before he became Dr. Freeze. And the rest of the panel will be the lab or the place that he works. And it's intricate, like, you know, you see intricate machinery and the workspace, desk, and, you know, crumpled up papers on the floors. Like Jack Kirby type of shit. And I dig that. This story, just like the art, is fresh. It's a fresh retelling of the origin of Mr. Freeze, and even more interesting, a fresh take on the early days of Bruce Wayne. Yeah, this takes place when probably just after year one, I would say, you know, if you had to put it in the chronology. This story is about more than it is about Mr. Freeze becoming Mr. Freeze. It's more about Bruce realizing that he needs assistance in the field. He can't do everything by himself. And I'm not talking about Alfred helping him out in the Batcave. I'm talking about, that didn't sound right, but no, he needs help out in the field and doing the detective work and things like that. He needs a team. So he puts together a team of competent professionals from forensic scientists to logical geniuses to even a guy who is expert muscle. Yeah, in Batman you would think he'd be the muscle, but no, he gets himself a badass veteran, and seeing Bruce put together this team is exciting. And it's actually 70% of the story. The rest of the story, the rest of the 30% is Mr. Freeze up until the last two issues. Mr. Freeze is more about his part of the story, and parts 1-3 are more about how he became Freeze and his relationship with his wife, which is weird. She has no character, Nora Freeze. But this story is more about Batman being obsessed with taking down this criminal named Peter Skatter, who is also a weird thing to me because this comic is supposed to take place a long time ago, but it's like there's a lot of 70s type shit in here, but it's anachronistic, just like Tim Burton's movie where you'll see some stuff that we have today in technology that we have today, but some of the people dressed like they're from the 50s and 60s. Peter Skatter, the main bad guy, is a black man wearing an afro, and all his underling and henchmen are white, so it's kind of weird. But yeah, the main crux of this story is Batman trying to take this guy down and putting a team together to take him down. And like I said, Mr. Freeze's origin and his eventual battle with Batman and the team isn't until like the last two issues. And this is the problem I had with this thing, though. Batman relationship with Commissioner Gordon. He treats Gordon like a fucking bitch here. He lies to Gordon, uses him, doesn't keep secrets from him, and Gordon allows himself to be used like a motherfucking bitch. She's like talking to Batman on the roof of the building, and he's like, "Yo, man, you don't let me in on this. You don't let me on this. You expect me to give you everything." And then when one of the cops starts to come up on the roof, he says, "Batman, you got to go. I can't be seen with you." It's weird, man. It's fucking strange. It's not like the Batman Gordon relationship from year one or Batman Begins. And I just didn't like that. What I did like, though, was the camaraderie between that team that Batman puts together and their dedications to their job and to each other. Like I said, it's a prequel to the Batman. How Batman eventually comes to be with Robin and the rest of, you know, the Batman we know and love, and he becomes more of a professional. It's right before all that, and the ending page is a nice little ending to this story. I like, so I give this probably a 4 stars out of 5, and check it out if you see it around. That's a story called Snow, issues 192 to 196 of Legends of the Dark Knight, Batman. This has been Doom. You can reach me at doomcast.blogspot.com or send an email to blackpun2000@yahoo.com. Until next time, peace.